Welcome to Akatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI.
Hello and welcome. Today we're diving deep, really deep, into arguably one of the heaviest hitters in American literature, Herman Melville's Moby Dick, or The Whale.
Oh, it's a giant, all right. Yeah. A real literary leviathan.
Mm-hmm.
And Melville himself, well, he was quite the figure. He poured so much of his own life into his work, didn't he? His time as a sailor, those whaling voyages.
Absolutely. And not just the adventures, but the hardships too, like his family's financial troubles. You can see how it shaped him, creating this unique voice that blends that democratic spirit you find in Whitman with Hawthorne's kind of dark psychological insight.
It's fascinating, though, how little recognition he got during his lifetime.
Yeah.
Moby Dick comes out in 1851. It's the peak of his experiences, wrestling with these huge philosophical, even theological questions.
And it flops. Well, maybe not flops, but certainly didn't set the world on fire. Mixed reviews, didn't sell well.
Right. It was pretty much forgotten for, what, 70 years? Until the 1920s, that Melville revival, when critics and readers finally woke up and realized, wait a minute, this might just be the great American novel.
It's because it's so hard to pin down, I think. Is it a sea story?
Yes.
A philosophical text? Definitely. Tragedy? Uh-huh. Encyclopedic guide to whaling? Strangely. Yes.
It really is all of those things. Captures that moment when America was looking outward, wrestling with its own destiny. You know?
Exactly. So that's the mission today. To grapple with this complex beast of a book, we'll explore the story, the characters, the themes that still feel incredibly relevant. Let's dive in.
And where else to start? But with maybe the most famous opening line in American literature, "Call me Ishmael."
Instantly iconic.
Right. He tells us he's restless, suffering from what he calls his hypos, this sort of deep melancholy. And the cure, go to sea. You immediately get this sense of yearning, this need for escape, for something more.
So he heads to New Bedford, Massachusetts, this big whaling town. And at the Spouter Inn, great name, by the way, he has this incredible encounter.
With Queequeg, the Polynesian harpooner. Talk about an unlikely pair.
Completely different worlds. But there's this immediate connection, this mutual respect. It's quite moving, actually.
And Melville makes such a point of it. Yeah. This bond between Ishmael and Queequeg, it cuts right through race, culture. It's like the moral heart of the story's beginning. A real statement about brotherhood.
Yeah, a kind of anchor before things get considerably darker.
Definitely darker.
Yeah.
So they travel together from New Bedford to Nantucket. The absolute center of the whaling universe back then.
And that's where they sign on to the Pequod.
Ah, the Pequod. Even the description of the ship is ominous. Somber, decorated with whale bones.
Right.
Like it's already a funeral ship.
And the crew is this mix from all over the world. A sort of floating microcosm brought together by this incredibly dangerous job.
But there's a warning sign, isn't there? That strange character, Elijah.
Oh, yeah, Elijah. He pops up, this ragged guy, muttering these cryptic warnings about Captain Ahab, about the voyage being doomed. Really sets an uneasy mood before they even sail.
And then finally, after keeping himself hidden, Captain Ahab appears on deck.
The man himself. And he makes quite an entrance. That presence, the prosthetic leg made from a whale's jawbone. You know he's not an ordinary captain.
Not ordinary at all. And then comes that scene on the quarterdeck. Just electrifying. Ahab gathers the crew and reveals the voyage's true purpose.
Yeah, forget the profit, forget the oil. This is personal.
It's a vendetta, pure and simple, against one specific whale, Moby Dick, the great white sperm whale that took his leg.
And he makes them all complicit, doesn't he? That moment with the gold coin.
The Spanish doubloon nails it to the mast. A prize for the first man to spot the white whale. It's theater, but it works. He binds them body and soul to his own monomania.
It just raises huge questions, right, about obsession. What happens when one person's consuming passion hijacked everything else? It feels like Melville is maybe commenting on a certain kind of extreme American individualism here, turning industry into a quest for destruction.
That's a really interesting way to put it. And you see the counterpoint immediately in Starbuck, the first mate.
Right. Starbuck tries to push back. He sees the madness for what it is, blasphemous, suicidal.
He's the voice of reason, of conventional morality. But he can't stop Ahab.
So what does that tell us about the power of that kind of charismatic but warped leadership versus reason?
It's tragic, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Starbuck knows it's wrong, deeply wrong. He wrestles with his duty versus his conscience. But in the end, his goodness is, well, passive. It can't stand up to Ahab's sheer force of will. It shows how easily reason can be drowned out.
And so the Pequod sails on, this incredibly long voyage Atlantic, Cape of Good Hope, into the vast Pacific.
And along the way, Melville gives us those chapters all about whales, the cetology chapters.
Which some readers find a bit challenging, like digressions.
Yeah, they can feel that way at first. But they're doing so much work. They build up Moby Dick's mystique. They show the sheer complexity and power of the natural world.
And they ground the story in the actual gritty reality of whaling, even while making it symbolic.
Exactly. It's realism and symbolism woven together. They make the whale hunt feel both epic and almost scientifically studied.
So as they sail, they encounter other whaling ships, these meetings called GAMs.
Right. And these GAMs often bring news, rumors, sightings of Moby Dick.
Mm.
They really ratchet up the tension.
There is that encounter with the Samuel Enderby.
Yeah, whose captain, Boomer, also lost a limb and arm to Moby Dick.
Aw.
But he's surprisingly cheerful about it. No grudge. He's just moved on.
Which just throws Ahab's obsession into even sharper relief, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Boomer's reaction is normal. Ahab's is something else entirely.
And then there's that heartbreaking meeting with the Rachel.
Oh, that one's tough. The Rachel's captain is frantically searching for his lost son, whose whale boat was last seen chasing Moby Dick.
Mm.
It's pure human desperation.
And Ahab's response?
He refuses to help. Won't spare the time or resources. He has his target.
That feels like a major turning point, a complete rejection of basic human solidarity.
It really is. Any remaining shred of compassion seems gone. It's just the whale now. Nothing else matters. It confirms how far gone he is.
Okay, let's maybe track the journeys of the key figures here. Ishmael starts out melancholic, maybe a bit naive.
And he ends up as the sole survivor, the witness. He goes from observer to philosophical interpreter. His journey is about survival, yes, but also understanding, enlightenment, maybe.
Whereas Ahab, well, his journey isn't about growth, is it?
Not at all. It's an intensification. A doubling down on his tragic path, he's like a figure from Shakespeare or Greek tragedy. This immense, defiant figure railing against fate, God. The universe.
A Promethean figure, maybe, but locked in a destructive struggle.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's the whale itself, Moby Dick.
Is he even a character or just a force?
That's the question, isn't it? He's this enormous, ambiguous symbol. For Ahab, he's pure evil, inscrutable malice. For Starbuck, just a big, dangerous animal, a dumb brute.
But for the reader, he remains unknowable. That whiteness, Melville talks about the terror of that blankness we project onto him.
Exactly. He's a screen for human fears and desires, which speaks to that theme of the limits of our knowledge, the ambiguity of everything.
We touched on Starbuck's struggle, reason versus obsession.
And his failure is part of the tragedy, the cost of inaction, perhaps.
And Queequeg, we started with him. His friendship with Ishmael is so central.
He embodies this kind of natural wisdom, a genuine spirituality outside of conventional religion. That bond is the strongest example of human connection in the whole book.
And that coffin he has made when he's sick, which ends up saving Ishmael.
Incredible symbolism there. Death becoming life. That coffin, built by Queequeg, is literally Ishmael's life preserver.
Yeah.
It speaks volumes about true humanity saving the day, in a way.
And the rest of the crew, this diverse group.
Melville seems to be showing us America in miniature, all these different people thrown together. But it also shows how fragile that democracy, that collective, can be when faced with a powerful, single-minded leader like Ahab.
So, bringing the themes together, we've got obsession and revenge, obviously central with Ahab.
Then humanity versus nature.
Yeah.
That constant, mm-hmm. violent struggle, and maybe the ultimate futility of trying to conquer the natural world.
Fate versus free will, all the prophecies, the omens, versus the choices characters like Starbuck make or fail to make. Are they doomed from the start?
Good question. And as we said, the limits of knowledge, the ambiguity of reality, perfectly embodied by the white whale.
And finally, brotherhood and isolation. Ishmael and Queequeg's bond versus Ahab's terrible self-inflicted loneliness.
All leading up to that incredible climax, the 3-day chase in the Pacific.
Day one, Moby Dick fights back hard, smashes boats, breaks Ahab's whalebone leg again.
Day two, more destruction. And Fedallah, Ahab's shadowy harpooner, gets dragged under, fulfilling one of his own eerie prophecies about his death.
The tension must be unbearable by day three.
It is. And then Ahab sees it, Fedallah's body impossibly tangled in the lines, lashed to Moby Dick's flank. A horrifying omen.
And the whale turns on the ship itself.
Rams the Pequod. It's going down. And Ahab, in one last defiant act.
To the last I grapple with thee.
From hell's heart I stab at thee. For hate's sake I spit my last breath at thee. He throws the harpoon.
And gets tangled in the line himself.
Pulled down into the depths by the very whale he hunted, the ship sinks, creating this vortex, pulling everyone down, except one.
So what does this all mean? Ahab's last words. Pure defiance, pure hatred, right to the bitter end.
Absolutely. No repentance, no understanding, just that all-consuming fire. And the ship's destruction feels almost like cosmic payback for hubris, for violating nature, for Ahab's blasphemy.
But Ishmael survives, clinging to Queequeg's coffin, rescued by the Rachel, the very ship Ahab ignored.
It's such a powerful image. Literal survival, but also symbolic. The witness lives. Humanity, or at least the potential for connection and reflection, endures, rescued by the compassion Ahab rejected.
Melville's way of telling the story is also part of its genius, right? It's not straightforward narration.
Not at all. You've got Ishmael's first-person voice looking back, but then it shifts into dramatic scenes like a play, the stage directions, soliloquies.
Okay, let's unpack that a bit. Why do that?
Well, it allows for both intimacy, Ishmael's personal thoughts and feelings, and this grand epic scale for the dramatic confrontations. Get the internal reflection and the external action side by side.
And the language itself. It's biblical, it's Shakespearean, it's poetic.
It elevates everything. It takes this, you know, industrial process of wailing and turns it into something mythic, something of cosmic importance.
The symbolism is just everywhere. Moby Dick, obviously. The Pequod as this doomed vessel of humanity.
Yeah.
The sea itself is this huge, indifferent stage. Even that gold doubloon.
The prize of the damned, basically. And the whole novel works as this vast allegory for the human condition, our search for meaning, our struggles with evil, within and without, the allure of obsession.
And all that foreshadowing, we mentioned Father Mapple's sermon early on, Elijah's warnings, Fidala's prophecies, it just builds this incredible sense of impending doom. You feel like it has to end badly.
You really do. It creates this atmosphere of inevitable tragedy.
So the overall feeling, it's awe-inspiring, thrilling, terrifying, but also intellectually profound.
It makes you think, long after you finish, about obsession, good and evil, our place in the natural world.
And maybe, most powerfully, about the value of simple human connection in the face of all that darkness and mystery.
Moby Dick is far more than an adventure story. It is a profound, encyclopedic exploration of the human condition. Its artistic merit lies in its audacious ambition to blend genres and its majestic poetic language that elevates a whaling voyage into a timeless myth, leaving us with a framework for ongoing contemplation of meaning, mortality, and our proper relationship with the natural world.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.